morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to day three of Interop and yet another episode of Interop Radio live from Interop. I'm Kurt Franklin. I'm your host for Interop Radio. And as has become our custom here, we've got yet another great show for you. We've got several fantastic guests coming to you live from the show floor. A show floor that has already opened. We're seeing the early morning attendees out there talking to the different vendors in the booths. See people walking around. You can see them looking at the programs, making their plans for the day. Of course, it'll be heavier later on because mornings tend to be a busy time for our conference here at Interop. And the conference is a huge part of Interop. We had our first keynote address this morning. And today is really the day when everything is happening at Interop. We have keynote addresses, we have conferences, we have the expo floor, and of course, we have Interop Radio. Well, our first guest today is the president of a company that is an important participant in the InteropNet and SDN Lab. I've got with me Mike Sheldon, who is president and CEO of Curvature. Mike, welcome to Interop Radio.
Thanks, Kurt. Happy to be here.
Now, Curvature isn't a vendor in the sense that many of our vendor partners are, is it? You don't actually make boxes that you ship out to people.
Well, we do have a line of products, but our core business is not a vendor. It's more of a systems integrator, value-added reseller, but one with a twist. We specialize in refurbished equipment and third-party maintenance of that equipment of every generation and virtually every manufacturer. So we resell Cisco and HP and Juniper and Dell and EMC, provide maintenance and managed services, professional services on the same.
All right. And now some of those professional services and the boxes that go with them are what Curvature is supplying here in the InteropNet and SDN Lab. Isn't that correct?
Correct. We've supplied a host of equipment, largely Cisco, and the management and configuration services and maintenance of those pieces of equipment here for the show.
All right. Now, I know that integration is a big part of what happens in the InteropNet as a whole. Mm-hmm. So can you talk to me a little bit about what's special with what Curvature is providing in terms of the services you bring to the entire InteropNet?
Well, to Interop, I mean, they have a need for wireless network, LAN, WAN, soup to nuts, and we provide a portion of that. Plus, we provide a number of our highly skilled engineers who install, configure, and maintain, I think, both the wireless and LAN side for this Interop. From a multi-vendor perspective, we don't just supply Cisco or IBM, for example. We supply a dozen different manufacturers. So interoperability is really sort of part and parcel of what we do.
Well, I've had a chance to meet and talk with the engineers who have been here. I spent some time with them at the Hot Stage event about a month ago, and of course I spent time with them here. And I can say that they are not only highly professional, but generally pleasant to be around. It's always nice to have folks on the team who you don't dread to see coming around the corner every morning.
Yeah, and they've been coming for many years. We've supplied the networking side of Interop, I think, for at least 5 or 6 years. And that same group of engineers that is the core of our technical team, both from a maintenance and professional services side, is here supplying their expertise this week.
Well, one of the questions I wanted to ask you today is, why do you do it? Why is Interop important to you? I know that for all the companies that come to InteropNet, this represents an investment on your part. Why do it? Why be part of Interop?
Well, I think any professional services or managed service provider has a challenge of getting their engineers into the field and into real-world situations beyond firefighting. A lot of maintenance providers, a lot of what we do is put out fires. They're down, we have to get them back up. They don't have a chance to build something from scratch and operate it and work with teams from other vendors to get the whole thing working. So it's a great professional development opportunity.
Well, it's interesting to hear someone from a vendor partner come back to that professional development education. It seems like just about everyone we talk to here at Interop, that's a piece of what they talk about. Yes, the human networking is critical. Everybody likes to come back. I've heard this described as summer camp for geeks or a reconvening of the tribe. But the fact is that Interop is a chance for just about everyone who comes in just about every capacity to learn something. And I think that's important and may make Interop unique among the conferences and shows that we all go to.
Yeah, I mean, one of the themes I talk about a lot is just the pace at which things are evolving. Technology, you know, 2 years ago, what was SDN? Now everybody's talking about SDN. Nobody still knows really what it is. VMware thinks they know. I'm not sure anybody else does. But learning happens by osmosis. So you get a bunch of people together that have a different experience and have expertise on various systems, and our engineers take a great deal from it.
Well, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the whole notion of integration in today's IT world. I know that years ago, when life revolved around mainframes and mini computers, systems integration was critical. It was essentially impossible for a company to call up IBM and say, just leave the box at the loading door. We'll handle it from there. Then came the advent of the PC and PC servers, and do-it-yourself seemed to become the order of the day. And yet, we know that professional services organizations are still vital pieces of the entire IT puzzle for a lot of companies. So when companies call you in, when your customers call you in, what are they looking for? Is it just expertise in a particular piece of equipment? Is it architectural knowledge of the entire infrastructure? Why do companies call an organization like Curvature to come in and work with them?
Well, we're a little unique in that we don't sell what's current on every vendor's price list. We sell current plus one, two, three generations old. So our consultation tends to be a little bit different in that we'll architect a solution that's the most fiscally responsible and not just functionally responsible. So they tend to come to us because they've gone to a Cisco or they've gone to an IBM and they've gotten an incredibly robust but tremendously over-engineered solution. And if you're opening a branch office in Poughkeepsie and you need 48 ports of PoE, there's a $250 switch that was out 5 years ago that is more than adequate for that purpose. Or there's the $4,000 switch that's on the price list today. And you cascade that through switching and routing and security and voice over IP and wireless. We've seen installations where a customer's come to us with a $150,000 bill of materials, and we've done it for 10. And then we provide the maintenance for a fraction of what the OEM charges. We provide the managed service for a fraction of what an IBM might charge. And you wrap it all up, and the CapEx and OpEx savings can be incredible, 75% or more over what you'd pay from a traditional plain vanilla VAR.
You know, it's interesting because you're talking about this in the world of automobiles, it would be the pre-owned market. So are we to assume that this is just startups and small companies who are interested in this pre-owned equipment? Or do you find an audience even in larger organizations, people who might well be on the preferred customer list of some of these primary vendors?
It really runs the gamut. Our core customer base is definitely the fast-growing cloud ISP technology companies that need to invest as every single dollar in innovation and their apps or what have you. And this infrastructure is just a means to an end. But, I mean, our largest customers number among them people like E-Trade Bank and Accenture and huge multinational corporations. So it really, the larger the company, the larger the install base of assets tend to be. And the larger that install base, the more we can help. We've seen companies that are spending $15 million a year on maintenance let us maintain half their network and cut their overall maintenance cost by half. Because we'll not only allow them to negotiate better rates from the OEM due to some competition. Does Cisco or HP have any competition when they're maintaining Cisco or HP? No, it's their own equipment, right? They assume that they can dictate the price. Throw a competitor in there, not only will you get a better price from them, but we can do maintenance on the legacy piece for 80 or 90% less.
That's really interesting. And to me, it's fascinating that one of the things that you mentioned in the entire integration puzzle is something that is still relatively new, and that is you mentioned the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
When you're you mentioned that ISPs constitute a piece of your customer base, but I assume that even in the companies that aren't ISPs, they may very well have a piece of their infrastructure that is out in the cloud somewhere. So do you find, first of all, that this previous generation equipment will work with services coming from the cloud? I mean, a lot of people have the idea in their head that you need the current generation equipment in order to work with the cloud. Is that the case? And are you finding it more challenging to integrate with the cloud as customers change what they want to do, getting services in and out of the cloud?
Yeah, I think it's a misconception that the cloud eliminates the need for a lot of equipment. What we've seen is certainly on-site servers tend to be shifted from inside your own firewall to the cloud. But if anything, the cloud increases the need for security and routing capability and larger pipes. That doesn't mean that those pieces of equipment have to be state-of-the-art. They just have to be more robust and enterprise class than what might have been an inexpensive edge product in the past. So, no, we actually find cloud companies themselves are great customers, and enterprises that are leveraging the cloud tend to have to make a number of unforeseen investments because they thought it was all good, right? I go to the cloud and I get rid of stuff and I simplify my life. And in reality, they go to the cloud and they get rid of part of their infrastructure and have to add to the other part. And we help them do that. Like I say, typically it's an unforeseen expense. We help them do that for a lot less.
Okay. One of the things that we try to do here on Interop Radio is that education piece. So help me educate our listeners on a point. How would someone know whether a particular application is suitable for previous generation technology versus something that needs the latest and greatest technology? Are there some intellectual steps that you should go through to try and figure out whether you need the new stuff or can perhaps look at previous generation equipment as an option?
There's no formula per se, but one of the things we I think are very good at, and one of our real pieces of intellectual property, is 20 years of experience with all of this equipment. So when a customer comes to us and says, for example, I'm upgrading my remote sites and I need PoE switching and a wireless network and security, we can very quickly figure out what kind of bandwidth requirements, what applications they will be running, and map the memory, processor speed, backplane speed, and everything else that this equipment has to their use. And what you'll find, I mean, this is sort of cliche, but you know, every Starbucks in the country has a T1 line attached. T1 lines came out in the late 90s. We're still building equipment that's state-of-the-art for thousands of dollars that will be connected to just a T1 line. So unless you're leveraging the state-of-the-art software services that some of these devices offer, and some are and some aren't, if you're not, a device from 6, 7, 8, even 10 years ago, and there are some caveats to devices that old, but there's no performance reason why what you're currently using or what was available 5 years ago wouldn't suit you.
And just for our listeners who aren't involved in buying these large pipes, in the world when all of the news is about how many communities are able to roll out gig to the house, how much bandwidth is represented in a T1?
1.5 meg, or 0.15% of a gig.
And yet, as you say, T1 is still one of the basic
standards
business connections that's in place out there.
Yeah, people are upgrading the speed of their wireless network to go from 10 meg to 50 meg to 100 meg or more, and then connecting it to, in some cases, a DSL connection in a lot of places, which is the only thing available over the phone line. It's funny. It is. The speed of the LAN is a little bit disconnected from the speed of the WAN. So if you're file sharing and doing a lot of apps, maybe you need maybe a gigabit switch would help you. But it's very unlikely that upgrades to your edge routers and things would make any sense unless you're accommodating a much larger pipe.
You know, I've got to ask, when you're talking with customers, is that the kind of conversation that you end up being part of? Or do customers come to you with all of that knowledge and they're able to tell you exactly what they need?
No, the first question we ask is why, typically. Why? Because they often come to us with sticker shock, having received a bill of materials from a Dimension Data or a large VAR or a systems integrator that works with one or a very small number of manufacturers. So one thing that people have to keep in mind is that the large manufacturers of equipment make money by selling equipment. So it's very unlikely that a Cisco or an HP is going to tell you, no, no, what you have is just fine. You don't need to upgrade. Please just use it for another 3 years. Come back to us in a few years. You're never going to hear that. So people get a recommendation, quote unquote, from their VAR representing these large manufacturers, and it's brand new firewalls. It's upgraded wireless N or even faster wireless Ethernet. It's upgraded firewall. And we ask why. Why are you doing this? And typically it's either a forced upgrade, maintenance is no longer available, they're scared about software updates. It's a standard 3 or 4 or 5 year upgrade cycle. That's just what we do. We just do it every 4 years. And then we ask why, and we keep pushing on the why question. And in the end, we've seen customers go from a prospective $3 million spend to a few hundred thousand and push all that CapEx years into the future. And they tend to become pretty good customers.
When you're talking with those customers, we've just had a question coming in from one of our listeners. Do you find it's a difficult decision? I mean, do people tend to come into the conversation assuming that while they may have some sticker shock, they really do need the latest and greatest? Is it difficult to convince an executive in IT that maybe they don't need the shiniest new box to put on their production floor?
It can be. I think as long as the message isn't, hey, take a big chance, stick with what you've got, they're never going to listen to that. Chance and risk are not in the language of IT departments, right? Risk to them equals job insecurity. If you phrase it as, no, there are certain devices like firewalls where you should really, really focus on being at the forefront and the latest and greatest technology, and we advocate that. We push customers back all the time to the latest and greatest when it comes to firewall or software security, things like Checkpoint, Cisco and others, Fortinet. When it comes to LAN switching, it's entirely the opposite. What are you getting for your money? There's a famous expression by Peter Drucker that nothing makes less sense than doing something really efficiently that shouldn't be done at all. And people spend an enormous amount of time and energy and money upgrading systems when, once completed, the users see no benefit in terms of efficiency or productivity at all. They don't notice that the upgrade occurred. And I guess you have to ask, why did you do it then, when you could have redeployed those assets to application development, R&D, something that's going to move the ball forward?
Now, with all that said, I know that there are people, again, to go back to an automobile analogy, there are people who say that for financial reasons, you should never, ever buy a new car. Let somebody else eat the steep part of the depreciation curve. In your mind, should people never be buying current, new products, or are there individual use cases where maybe the latest and greatest is something that they need for a particular application?
Oh, there absolutely are. We work with not just used equipment. We're also a top-tier reseller for Arista and Fortinet and some of the leading A10, some of the leading edge providers when it comes to switching or load balancing. And if you're a high-frequency trading firm, a hedge fund, and every millisecond of delay from getting that order in may cost you money, go get the very best Arista switch, which has the lowest latency. It's the best switch on the market. But if you're not, right, and we've seen huge investment banks with beautiful 6500 Cisco wiring closet switches that they'll probably use now that they're working with us for 15 more years because they're non-blocking gigabit Ethernet. And what else do you need in the wiring closet? What's it going to do? It's a layer 2 switch. And yet there are customers upgrading those switches every 5 years. It's nonsense. So, yes, there are applications for new equipment. No, many of the applications people think are appropriate are not.
Well, Mike, we're coming down to the end of our time together. You've been a tremendous guest for us. And one of the questions I have, I tend to ask everybody, first, How can people find the company? If people need to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Well, it's curvature.com. You can tweet us, text us. All of our contact information is Curvature. So if you search for Curvature on Twitter, you search for Curvature on the web, you'll find us.
And how about you? I mean, with all of your experience, do you do any blogging? Are you doing any tweeting? Or is there any way that people can keep up with your thoughts?
I do have a blog on our website that comes out from time to time, about monthly. I'm also speaking today at Interop. I'm one of the speakers at 2 o'clock in Room K. So if you want to hear about these issues in more detail, please come to that talk.
Outstanding. Mike, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate you being a guest here on Interop Radio.
Kurt, thanks a lot.
That was Mike Sheldon, President and CEO of Curvature. We really appreciate him being with us. And there's much more of Interop Radio to come today. We're going to take just a brief break. Be right back with you with segment two of Interop Radio. And we're back here at Interop Radio. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Now, we've got our next guest coming on. This is another member of the InteropNet team. And he is someone else that we're pleased to have with us because, well, he's one of the guys who has helped keep everything running for us, and I've enjoyed being able to talk with him and now enjoying the chance of talking with him with you. I have with me Aaron Rallo, founder and CEO of TSO Logic. Aaron, welcome to Interop Radio.
Thanks, Kurt. It's great to be here.
Now, Aaron, for those of our listeners who don't know TSO Logic, can you tell us what your company does?
So at TSO Logic, we're focused on improving efficiency levels in data centers and on networks by connecting the business to the data centers that support them. So looking at things like different types of applications, different types of workloads, and then finding ways to optimize how those workloads are running within the data center to save money on licenses, save money on power, maintenance, et cetera.
Okay, so let's dig into that a little bit. It sounds like what you're providing is almost a consulting service. Do you have any hardware or software components to what you do, or is it purely a consulting?
It's actually purely a software service. So it's a complete software solution that gets implemented. It interfaces with SDN controllers, interfaces with the virtualization stack, understands what applications are running where within the network, and then identifies idle versus active capacity within that network. So you get the opportunity to see exactly how much compute you need to service a given workload. And if you have waste or server sprawl or any underutilized capacity, we can get that back and save on license fees, power, et cetera.
Well, now I've heard a lot of people talking about SDN, software defined networking. And many people, when they're talking about the potential of SDN, and let's admit right now that a lot of the conversations are about the potential of SDN. Many people talk about using SDN with a virtualized server environment so that as you stand up and tear down the various servers to meet a shifting load, you can essentially set up and tear down networks and network links to go along with those servers. Is that the kind of thing that you're talking about, figuring out how to do that?
It's a combination of figuring out how to do that, but also figuring out exactly what you need to support a given application. So I think one of the challenges that we find in the data center space is that it is a little bit vague in terms of where you can utilize SDN to recognize efficiencies and to improve overall network performance and create and destroy things on the fly. With a lack of visibility into what's happening, it's very difficult to make those decisions and investments. So on a very simple front, you can look at something like an F5 global load balancer combined with dynamic provisioning and orchestration, and that could really be your ability to dynamically create and destroy things on the fly just based on where your workloads are running.
Now, I have to ask, I've heard many different people talking about where we are in the maturity curve of SDN. When you're talking to your customer, do you now have a lot of customers who are deploying SDN in something like a production environment?
No, we're not really seeing broad-scale deployment of SDN in prod. I mean, we're seeing more SDN testing within their labs, but we are seeing more dynamic provisioning and orchestration happening inside of the data center in general, and I think the next logical step is going to be SDN. So where TSO Logic fits is that we tie in to their existing infrastructure today, talking to vCenter, to Hyper-V, and to other technologies, network load balancers, et cetera. And then as SDN becomes more prominent and that begins to drive some of the dynamic activity, we're tied into that as well.
Okay, so with SDN, you mentioned some of the server virtualization. And over the years, there's been some standardization. There are two or three different flavors of virtualization. And if you can work with those, then you can figure out probably 95% of all the situations out there, maybe more. Mm-hmm. Where are we in terms of getting to that level of standardization in SDN? I mean, is it enough from your company's standpoint? Is it enough to speak OpenFlow, or are you still having to do some deeper hooks into a bunch of different proprietary protocols and standards?
Yeah, it's definitely a bunch of different proprietary standards that we have to connect into. You really have to understand the different layers of what's running within the data center from the top all the way to the bottom and be able to pull all that data together. And OpenFlow and a lot of the standardized SDN technologies is certainly evolving. We're just not seeing enough distribution and deployment of it to make that the only point of interface.
Well, at this point, dealing with all the companies, all the proprietary interfaces you do, how optimistic are you about things reaching a state of standardization at some point before we all retire? I mean, is that something that you are fairly certain is going to happen, let's say, in the next 3 or 4 years, or do you think this one's going to be a long, drawn-out battle?
I think it's going to be just like all the other ones in a longer process. I mean, and I've been in the data center industry for 20 years as an operator, and more recently on the provider side of things, and I've been waiting for standards to come along. And and earlier in my career, I believed a lot of those things were really going to happen. I think now the thought that I have is there's going to be a lot of different technologies, and if we're going to build software and if we're going to succeed, we have to talk to all of it and be ready to talk to all of it and adapt and expand. Because, one standard coming in, there's no history, there's no proof that that's ever going to happen. Whether it was with SNMP, where you had multiple flavors of it and different ways of collecting the same data, data center operators, they do what they have to do to survive, and that is often a very vendor agnostic approach.
Well, with the fragmentation in the protocols and standards out there, do you think that that is something that is going to make it take a little bit longer for us to see the full benefits of SDN across the industry? Or are people hungry enough for the benefits of SDN that they're going to make it work even though the vendors are in some cases making it more difficult than it should be?
Yeah, my opinion is that everybody's going to do their own thing. Each data center operator is going to make their own choices and look at how they're integrating and implementing different solutions based on their business, their needs, and their data centers. And it's up to the providers to be able to talk to and integrate with all the different things to make sense of it.
Well, it seems to me that the TSO Logic and you are in a great position to look at some of the promise versus the reality. And I know that Gartner has the famous hype curve that we're all familiar with. Where are we with SDN? Is it still more hype than reality, or are we seeing what's actually possible starting to catch up with some of the hype that we've had out there?
I think it's going to take a little bit more push, a little bit more, I don't want to say marketing, but a little more proof of its viability within the industry. Things like the SDN lab here at Interop go a long way for that, because we can really showcase exactly how powerful those solutions can be and what the benefits are of getting there. And I think the more we do that, the more we can demonstrate that it works in live environments, the more adoption we'll be able to gain on that front. And in the meantime, you know, we have to continue to add value and interface with lots of different pieces and make sure that we're demonstrating the capabilities of what they can do today and also what they can do tomorrow as they move in to more dynamic provisioning and more SDN-style capabilities.
Well, now, you mentioned the SDN lab here at Interop. Let's talk a little bit about the SDN lab. Can you talk to us about who you're interfacing with, what you're doing? You know, if someone comes to see you here at SDN Lab, what are they going to see?
So what we're demonstrating within the SDN Lab is the ability to use SDN both from a data center and from a networking perspective to look at where workloads are running and then have the ability to move those workloads between either physical locations or within an individual location. So one example that we've brought to light is if you've got server infrastructure running in New York and server infrastructure running in Vegas, and we're in the middle of a trade show here in Vegas, and latency is a big factor, we want to make sure that the latency is minimal as possible. When the show floor is open, we're going to run all the workload on the servers here in Vegas, but when the show floor is closed, we can migrate some of that workload, servers that are a little bit less expensive to run in the New York market. So, you know, being able to dynamically provision, create, and destroy those VMs based on where the traffic is going, and then also looking at ways to overall improve the efficiency of the network. So tying into things like global load balancers, tying into things even like the Ruckus wireless controllers that are supporting the wireless hotspots here, being able to provision them dynamically. When the show floor is open and there's thousands of people connected to the network, we've got all the access points running. And when the show floor is closed and there's only a handful of connections, we can begin to power down or reduce the power state on some of those control points to improve efficiencies. And we're demonstrating how all of that can be done, whether it's workload on servers or whether it's users connected to a wireless network, how that data can be moved seamlessly without impacting service level agreements and without any real heavy lifting.
Now, I've got to ask you something, because many of our listeners are not part of very large organizations and therefore they aren't specialists in things like load balancing. So you mentioned something that I think is going to surprise some people. With the internet out there, and especially the promise of the cloud, a lot of what was said was basically that it doesn't matter where loads happen. And in one sense, you're talking about that exact thing being true, that we can take a load that's running here in Las Vegas, and when the show floor closes here, we can shift that to a server in a colo on the East Coast, or frankly, we could do it to Denver or to the Bay Area where we have other colo locations. But you also mentioned the idea of it being more efficient to have those loads closer to the people consuming them. That's going to surprise a lot of people. Is that something that has to be under consideration in a lot of cases, that you want your application to be physically close to where the heaviest use is?
You know, it really depends on the type of business and the factors that come into play. Latency is certainly a factor in some businesses. I'll give you a great example. You know, it could be one of the stock exchanges, right? We've got servers that live in New York, very close to the exchange. Those servers need to be very low latency because they're doing high-frequency trading. And yet when the market is closed, they can be moved offloaded to another location where it's much less expensive to run those workloads. In other businesses, latency might not be a factor, but maybe security is. You might have some data within your environment that you have to keep on-premise in a highly secured facility, and you might have other data that you can move off-prem. So it's deciding what workloads run where based on your business priorities and needs, and then using orchestration to move those workloads around.
Well, the orchestration piece, now, is that something that requires SDN, this moving workloads, does it require what we call SDN? Or is that something that is available with maybe minus one generation technology?
Yeah, I think a lot of the SDN technology, or at least the terms that we're using for SDN today, evolved from a lot of the things that we were doing even several years ago with global load balancing. So that I wouldn't say that it's required, but I do believe that SDN is going to make it an awful lot easier to do that. And of course, it requires a variety of changes in the applications, the way we build them, the way we host them, and the way that we run the infrastructure.
The conversation that you and I are having right now about these issues, is that something that you find yourself getting into with some of your customers as well when they come to you with a problem? Are you still in the education part of things, or do you find that your customers pretty much know everything there is to know and are just looking for a point solution?
Oh, no, it's very much education. It's very much starting with the knowledge of what types of workloads do they have, where are they running, and how can they improve the efficiency levels of it, and then starting to look at things like if they're in a data center that's coming up against a capacity constraint, maybe they don't want to build another full data center, but they want to start moving some of their workloads off to other locations or other facilities, and then figuring out the best way to do that. And, you know, SDN is one way. Top-level orchestration is another way. There's a lot of different ways to solve the problem, but fundamentally, you need the information to determine if it's a problem worth solving.
Well, you know, with that, I mean, is your solution something that works only with the new SDN, or do you find yourself working with this previous generation infrastructure as well?
Oh, almost 95% of the time it's with previous generations of infrastructure today. And the hope is that as we begin to gain more momentum in the marketplace with SDN, we'll be ahead of that curve and already integrated and ready to tie in. And certainly being able to showcase it, places like in the SDN lab here, allows us to do that, because this really is something that people are talking about and asking about. And in our experience anyways, very, very few people are actually doing real-time in production today.
Well, another question that I'm asking a lot of my guests, how are you finding the interop experience? What are you getting out of being here? I mean, both as a company and as a person, what are you doing around interop? Is it a good time, or are you at a stage of just can't wait for it to end so you can walk out of the expo hall for the last time?
No, you know, it's been a great experience for us here. You know, being inside of the InteropNet and the NOC and in the SDN lab and having a small presence here at our booth over at the new Innovators Pavilion, it's been great to talk to lots of different people, understand some types of, you know, different challenges or problems they're facing in their business and see if we can help them. The other thing I'll give you a little nugget on is we actively monitor the network here and the efficiency levels and the utilization levels, we've been able to determine a year-over-year increase in traffic on the network. So from the looks of it, based on our data, it's about 16% busier on the expo floor than it was last year at the same time on the same day. So the busiest time last year was about the second hour on the first day of the show, and the second day was even busier. So we're anticipating that those curves will continue, and today will be even busier than it was yesterday and it was last year.
That sounds like some great information, and I'll look forward to checking in with you later on, dude, to see how that all works out.
Great. Thanks so much, Kurt.
Aaron, thank you for taking the time to be with us. One last quick question. How can people reach you? If they want to know more about your company, where do they go to get that information?
So if they're here at the show today, they can stop over to the new Innovators Pavilion. They can check us out in the SDN lab. And, of course, www.tsologic.com.
And you personally, do you do any blogging? Do you do any tweeting? Are you on all the social media and the Tweety pipes and all that? How do people follow you?
We do, at TSO Logic, and we're going to be putting up a blog post that kind of recaps some of the networking results that we found in terms of user connectivity and whatnot. It'll be up there in the next couple of hours. We'll put another one up tomorrow as well.
Outstanding. Well, Aaron, thank you so much. We appreciate you taking the time out of a busy schedule to be with us.
Thanks, Kurt. Appreciate it.
That was Aaron Rallo, founder and CEO of TSO Logic, one of the partners we have here in the InteropNet and SDN lab. We appreciate him being with us. And Interop Radio will be right back to you in a moment with our third segment and yet another great guest. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Here with Interop Radio, segment three of our show this morning from the expo floor at Interop. An expo floor that, by the way, is filling up. You know, when we came to you at the beginning and I mentioned that we were on the expo floor, there were a few people wandering around. I think that a lot of people went out and were at the events that many of the vendors were having last night. So perhaps just a little bit slow to get in this morning, a little bit more relaxed on the floor. but now the traffic is picking up, more and more people out here, and that's great because we have a great guest here with us to end this particular show. We have with us Tim Titus of Path Solutions. Tim, welcome back
Thank
to Interop Radio.
Thank you.
We are always thrilled to have you here with us on Interop Radio, one of our favorite guests. And so I've got to ask you, how have things been going so far at Interop?
Actually, it's been wild, crazy, fun. It's one of those things where you figure there's always something going on. You turn left and you figure there's stuff to do. You turn right, there's stuff to do. It's an incredible place. I love it. Every year I look forward to this. It's a great group of folks to reconnect with. And sometimes you only encounter these folks once a year, and it's just kind of, there's a brotherhood. I think a lot of attendees even come back and they recognize buddies that they've met that they only get to see here. And it's a different world because these are people in the industry, people who have solutions to problems. You can ask your buddies and say, hey, how did you solve this problem? And they'll come up with a unique solution that you never would have thought of. And you figure, gee, that only happens once a year here at the show. It's amazing. It really is amazing.
You know, it's really a two-headed thing because on the one hand, you're absolutely right. You're here and the creativity
Yeah.
that is all around you. You know, people who are used to finding solutions to challenging problems, people who have ideas about things that they aren't able to put into practice in their day-to-day business and talking to one another. And you can listen to those conversations, be part of those conversations, and you say, wow, wouldn't it be great for this to happen much more often? But the other side is that we tend to do it so intensely that I think that it might just kill us all if we tried to get together and do this an awful lot more often because it really is a fairly intense experience.
Yeah, yeah. But I think in one sense there could be a really neat adjustment of that intense experience in the fact that I believe that UBM and Interop, they're looking to end up expanding Interop to being a continuous online presence to end up getting folks to say, you want to learn about new stuff, you want to see the latest and greatest, but not have to say, gee, it's only once a year. There's a newfangled thing called the internet, folks, and that's going to allow people to say, let's learn about that new technology any time of year.
You know, I think I've heard of this internet thing, and I hear that it just might take off. I don't know. It might be a little new. But you know, in all seriousness, that's what we are trying to do with, among other things, Interop Radio. And certainly you've been a part of that. I've been talking with Tim about coming back and doing some special programs with us, some dealing with some of the issues that we've had a chance to talk about, hear about from other people, and, you know, figure out how to bring you some of this, because it really is, I hear people describe it in different ways, you know, a summer camp for geeks, you know, a gathering of the internet tribe or the networking tribe. And we really can figure out, I think, how to keep some of that going. Great people like Tim are a big piece of that. So definitely stay tuned in the weeks to come, the very few weeks that follow the physical program here at Interop. We're going to be talking about a number of things that I think will make you happy out there and keep this spirit of learning and, I'll go all touchy-feeling, the feeling of fellowship going on, because that's really what it is, the idea that we're all in this together and that we each have a lot to learn from all the folks around us.
Yeah, you hang around folks that have broad, diverse skill sets, you're going to pick up on that knowledge, and that's going to make you a more powerful person. I found it just incredibly fun to hang around with the NOC team here. I would argue that you have the best of the best of the world working in that NOC. There's people that helped write some of the RFCs for IPv6. There's some of the folks that helped design some of the hardware that's in you know, a lot of the chipsets and equipment that's out there. And these are the folks who built this stuff from scratch, and they really know their stuff. And if you hang around with the likes of that group, you're going to feel a little bit like a junior guy, but on the other hand, you're going to absorb knowledge faster than ever before. And I just find that ability to turn your brain into a sponge and say, let me suck all this up, and hopefully some of it will stick. It's an amazing environment.
And, you know, the other interesting thing, as you point out, we do have a collection of alpha geeks here. And one of the other things we like to talk about is how you manage a group like that so that they're all working in the same direction rather than sitting around trying to prove how they're smarter than all the other alpha geeks in the room. And there really is very little of that. I won't go so far as to say there's absolutely none, but there's very little of that you get in the NOC team.
Yeah, what's amazing about that, I think there's two reasons, is you know, one, Glenn wouldn't put up with it, and he's the leader of all of these cats, and herding cats, everyone knows, is you know, one of the bigger challenges. But the second thing is really there's more of a point of pride of nobody really has to prove anything. They are experts, and so there's not, you know, huge egos carried around on shoulders. It's, you know your stuff, you know what you don't know, and you're willing to defer to the person who knows their stuff. And that creates a wonderful balance throughout the environment.
Well, Tim, you mentioned some of the adventures we've had, and I know that one of the things that you're doing here is keeping track of all the stuff that goes on the network, ideally to let the NOC team know that an adventure is about to happen before the attendees and the exhibitors know that an adventure is bubbling just under the surface. So, you know, how have things been from the adventure standpoint? Have we been fairly stable, or have we managed to head off some of those adventures of the past?
We've been able to head off a number of, I'm going to call them bad adventures. I mean, you can have some good adventures, but we've been able to head off a number of bad adventures. What our solution does is it offers root cause network troubleshooting for the NOC team. And what the solution does is it will collect 18 error counters of information on every interface of the entire infrastructure every 5 minutes. And in addition, we're collecting routing tables, ARP caches, bridge tables, spanning tree information, LLDP, CDP, PoE information. So we're going after all of the information that any seasoned network engineer would want to know about their network, automatically collect this information, bring it back, give it a big data analysis with our heuristics engine, and come up with plain English answers of what's broken in that environment. What that means is that the NOC team or the ITMs, really anybody at any skill set working in the environment, can quickly come up with the root cause of the problem, and they don't have to say, gee, it's somewhere between this point and this point. Let's get a network diagram out. Let's find out what's going on with all the different switches and routers. No, the problem is on this port, on this switch, and it's a jumbo frame misconfiguration. Change that configuration, and we shouldn't have packet loss there anymore. So it gives very rapid resolution, which is critically important because of how short this show is. We have an ITM crew that's out there fixing problems for users. They have to get problems resolved within minutes of getting the ticket opened. And if our tool gives them the plain English answer of saying, here's where it is, here's what you need to do, that means they can jump on it and get it fixed within minutes, which means there's no problems with those vendors connecting up to the network. They get full performance. And you don't end up having an embarrassment on the network of saying, gee, somebody couldn't get network connectivity, and they couldn't get network connectivity for the entire three-day show, which just wouldn't be tolerated.
Right, absolutely. Now, you mentioned plain English, and so there was a term you used in the early part of that answer, and I'd like to drill into it a little bit so that our listeners understand it a bit more. You talked about root cause analysis. What do you mean? Why is root cause analysis different? I mean, what are these root causes that you're talking about, and why is it important to have that versus whatever else they might be able to get?
Well, a lot of tools are indicative, and that's really, I think, where I saw a problem or a gap in the market is that if you have a tool that is indicative of a problem, for example, you put a sniffer on a wire and you capture a bunch of packets and you're looking to solve a voice quality problem with a sniffer, all the sniffer will do is tell you, gee, I saw packet number one, I saw packet number two, I saw packet number four, I saw packet number five. Well, what happened to packet three? It's missing. It is going to confirm that you have a problem, but it can't help tell you where the problem happened or why. And so it really comes down to, are you using the right tool to find the problem? And that's where we figure we can get a root cause down to, it's actually here on this port on this switch, and it's a cabling fault. Go get the cable test equipment out, or go replace the patch cord, and your problem will probably go away. So that's where we figure is, if you have an indicative tool, that's good, but if you had a root cause troubleshooting tool, it just means you get to the solution a lot faster.
One of the things that I've noticed here at Interop is that there seem to be a lot of companies doing monitoring and probing and sniffing and all of those things. I will even say there seem to be more of those this year than I have seen in previous years. What is your sense of why people are so interested in understanding what's going on the net? I mean, is this something that all of a sudden people have realized they might want to know, or has it been a slow evolution? Why do you think this is such a hot area at this year's Interop?
I'm just going to jump right out and be bold and say it. I'm going to call it embarrassment. And it's that I think there's a lot of professionals out there that like to say, gee, I'm doing a great job at running this network. But the minute they have a manager come up to them and say, what happened 2 hours ago when I had a poor quality phone call and we lost a customer that was important to our business? It's embarrassing to have that. And in some senses, career limiting. And if you run a network, you can't be blind in that environment. You can't have glitches. You can't have problems. So there's a lot of folks out there looking to say, okay, let's get something that's going to maybe do some APM, do some application performance monitoring, and simulate some traffic through this network. That's good, but in one sense, it'll tell you that you've confirmed that you have a problem. Gee, we're confirming we have packet loss between A and B. Now we got to find out where the packet loss is happening. And typically that means diving into CLIs, looking at interfaces, looking at error counters, and we figure we're going to make that part easy by saying, here is the problem. You don't even need to confirm it. This is exactly what's wrong with your network so that you can fix it and not have that problem happen in the first place. So it's a question as to, are you looking to get a tool to confirm a problem? Are you getting a tool to solve a problem? And you really have to decide what you're looking for.
Well, speaking of looking for things, what are you looking for in the next day or two here at Interop? We've got it the rest of today here with the expo open. Tomorrow is a short day for the expo. We'll be closing up at 3 p.m. Pacific. That doesn't mean that Interop is over, because Friday is another day of conferences. So what do you still have on your, I want to see, do,
well,
experience this?
We got a ton of things actually still on our plate here. I have a Knock Theater speaking session at 2 p.m. I have Mandalay Bay Room I speaking session about root cause network troubleshooting. And I'm going to be talking about process, procedure, and tool selection. Because in one sense, for troubleshooting, I think a lot of people get stuck saying, gee, we tried this, we tried that, and we still can't get this problem solved. And that's why troubleshooting takes weeks, is that people aren't looking in the right places. And so I figure if we can bring some good methodology to play and say, here is a methodology that you can use to make sure that every problem is able to be solved no matter what, and also the right tool selection, depending upon what you're trying to do, is choose the right tool, that's going to help people troubleshoot. So we have those going on. But in our booth, booth 1621, we have Brian Chi interviewing a number of our customers about how our software has helped them do root cause troubleshooting and prevent and pre-troubleshoot their network and avoid having problems in the first place so that they don't have to have that embarrassing situation happen. So we have those interviews going on. And then at the last session of the day in our booth, Brian Shi talks about one of the most interesting PaaS solutions deployments ever, which is how we're monitoring the SOAST Undersea Observatory. And this is a network that is, arguably, it's a data center that is 3 miles down at the bottom of the ocean, and it's measuring temperature and measuring salinity and has a bunch of scientific instruments. But all of the data these scientific instruments collect has to be stored in this undersea data center and then moved via this cable off-site. If they have any problems there, they need to know about it, because it's very challenging to solve network problems or even troubleshoot 3 miles under the ocean. So he's going to be talking about that at the end of each day.
Yeah, I've heard Brian say that it's a heck of a service call.
Yes.
when they have to do something down there. Well, Tim, we appreciate it every time you're able to be with us. As I said, you're one of our favorite guests here on Interop Radio, and we are looking forward to having you on many more times. There's a lot more for us to talk about.
Yeah, it's always fun.
That was Tim Titus, the CTO of PaaS Solutions, here talking about what they're doing at Interop and what's coming up on their plate and for many of us here at Interop. Now, speaking of what's coming up, we do have another show here today, 4 p.m. Pacific, that's 7 p.m. Eastern, another outstanding roster of guests. Now, to be honest, I've got to tell you, the roster at 4 is going to be wild. We have Rob Nagy of Deep Dive Networking. We have Jeff Enters of HP. And we have some of the engineering crew from Curvature. Now, you heard the Curvature CEO earlier in this show, those networking guys that he leaves behind. We're going to talk with them about what they've been seeing and what they've been troubleshooting here at the show. So you don't want to miss the 4 o'clock show today. Well, I've got to go get ready. You probably need to get some work done before you join us at 4 o'clock, but we'll all be right back here on Interop Radio at that time. Well, for everyone here at Interop Radio, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you right back here at 4 p.m. Pacific Time.